G7. Number 23A.
All right, we open our study material at page 12, where we have the law in the textbook as a title. Page 12. And so we want to go through the textbook chapter by chapter quickly in order to see what Mrs. Eddy says about law, so that we have a firm ground on the authority of the textbook, and then we will see what we are going to do with it. So what you have here is a matrix on the law as given in the Christian Science textbook. And as I said, what one does first, and we go along that line of method to investigate the subject, we go to the first chapter and then to the next, always with the question, what does Mrs. Eddy say about the term law, and make a short epitome for ourselves in order to know what is the main piece of that chapter, or the law in that chapter. Again, a footnote that I want to make is always, don't think that the epitome that I have here in the matrix is the only rendering that is possible. When one makes an epitome, one always chooses among various renderings and terms and so on, so that if you don't see it right away in the way that I have epitomized it, and you perhaps feel that one or the other term should be different, or I can say it in a different way, well, do it. That's all right. So don't feel that this rendering which we have here is the one and the only rendering possible. We know that it is a question of tonality. The tonality must be right, not the way we express the tonality. So we start with the chapter on prayer. In this matrix you have here prayer, that I felt here that law remains law. That's what she wants to bring out. Law remains law, law as such. That would be a very good cornerstone to go out from, just to say law is what? Law is law as such. That's our building cornerstone on which we want to build. In her textbook, she has various renderings. She says, law cannot be evaded. Cannot be evaded. Law remains law, so to say. So I try now with other words to bring out the tonality of it, that she says that law cannot be evaded, a law never yields, you see, it remains a law. Can you see the tonality of it? That you just have law is law, and it cannot be evaded, it does not yield to anything else. That's the certainty of a law. So we have a first step, and then we can go to the second chapter, to Atonement and Eucharist. And my epitome here is, the law of spirit saves from the law of matter. Here we have various renderings in the textbook that show that the law of spirit does not yield to the law of matter. It saves from the law of matter. Now we have the contraposition, law of spirit, law of matter. What is the relationship between them? I mean, that it just would show here in various ways that the law of spirit saves us from the counterfeit law of spirit, namely from the law of matter. So if we rely on the law of spirit, we don't have to fear that we miss something, because we do not rely on the law of matter. She says that the law sustains us in defiance of matter and mortality. Can you see? The law sustains us in defiance of the law of matter. Law puts material law to silence. Again, another rendering in the textbook that shows that the law of spirit really saves us from the law of matter. The law of spirit, she said, redeems us from the law of matter, sin and death. It's about the same thing what I have here. So we can see the step further than prayer is what? Prayer is the word as word. Law is law and remains law. Now if you put a little bit of a Christ sense into that, then you see that the law remains law, so that under the Christ it saves us from an opposite law or from a counterfeit law. So you have the saving aspect in it, the Christ aspect in it, the saving that saves us from the opposite. So if we have started out in prayer and see law remains law, then we can be sure in Atonement and Eucharist that this law saves us from any concept that is not of a divine law, from the law of sin, sickness and death. It does not really hurt us, it does not really interfere with the law of spirit. Then we go to marriage, to the third chapter. I have put here the higher law governs. Can you see the next step after Atonement and Eucharist and spiritual order? When in Atonement and Eucharist we have the sense that spirit saves us from its opposite, from the law of matter, then we can see in marriage that always the higher governs the lower, or else we will be subject under the law of matter. So that's a point where you get the touch of Christianity in the world. Namely, always Christianity is that which is supreme, which is above. You have in the definition of God's oath 3:2, incorporeal, divine, and Christianity supreme. Christianity always shows us the supremacy of the spiritual over the material. So the higher law governs the material law. She says the law of soul is higher than the material laws. The spiritual law masters the so-called physical laws. Can you see if I say that the spiritual law masters the material law, or if I say the spiritual law is the higher than the spiritual law, I say more or less the same thing with different terms, with different words, but it gives you a sense of the supremacy of Christianity stated in the word. And then when we go further and come to the fourth chapter, Christian Science versus Spiritualism, I have the epitome, law is independent of beliefs. Can you see the science in it, the science touching it? Law versus beliefs. Beliefs have nothing to do with the science, so that which is the counterfeit of science is beliefs, is emotion, all these things that have no foundation in science. So here, quite naturally, you see, in the chapter on Christian Science versus Spiritualism, I have that tone that the law is independent of beliefs. For instance, she says the law is not personal. Personal is naturally a belief. So it is not personal, it's not dependent, a law is not dependent on people's view, on people and people's concept. All what people are conceiving is not a law, and cannot touch really the divine law. Or she says here that the divine principle lives on in spite of the so-called laws of matter. And you see, the so-called laws of matter cannot touch really the science of it. Or she said, spirit cannot be set aside by material law. It just is not possible that beliefs and material laws and material and personal opinions can touch a spiritual law. She also says that error cannot hide from the law of God. So again, one can see the law of God is that which is the only law, and therefore a belief cannot hide itself from the law of God. It just is independent of the law of God. Yes. That is what we have here in these four chapters. Now, when you have that and are not quite sure if these epitomes are tonality-wise right, if our findings are exact or not, then what we do as a next step, I said in the last hour, then we ask ourselves, have these four chapters a common denominator? Can I see that there is common to all those four chapters? And that naturally demands spiritual consciousness, spiritual scientific sense. There comes in, do we have a sense of tonality within us that is according to the category of being? Can I see here, so to say, the word stated, the word of God stated, and I felt I could see the common denominator, what I have on top of that column, as the index I. Always when we have the verticals, we call it the index I. Then when we have the horizontals, we call them the index J. That's what the mathematics uses as indicating those two indices. So I put there, God's law is the only law. That's perhaps the summary of all the four. It's the only law. Why is it the only law? In prayer we say, law is law. Okay. Are there not other laws besides that? At Domine and Eucharist say, the law of spirit saves us from the belief in any other law, saves us from the law of matter, so that the law of God is the only law. There is no other law. And in Christianity it says that law of God is supreme. It's far above every other law. Far above. You can hear the Christianity sense. And finally, in the fourth chapter, we have that law of God is not influenced by any other laws. That it remains what it is. The law remains a law. God's law remains what it is. It's the only law and cannot be influenced by beliefs, by opinions, by sentimentalism, by religious feelings, and so on. So that we again gain the sense those four chapters just feel to state the basis of law, namely that the law of God is the only law. Yeah. Okay, let's go further and we come to the second vertical, to the Christ chapters. In the Christ chapters we begin with animal magnetism, unmasked. There is only one reference to law, so that's always a bit tricky when there is only one statement, because it would be nice to have various statements in order to feel out the tonality of it. So here it is just so that she says in that chapter, there is no law against spirit. Can you hear now animal magnetism? She tackles now animal magnetism, the belief that animal magnetism is a law that acts against spirit. So she says, no, there is no such a law against the law of spirit. There is no other law. And so handles really the standpoint of animal magnetism right away. It says, okay, animal magnetism is not the law. Evil, disease, and death are not the law. They are not against the law of spirit. So we feel already that security of the Christ within us, which says, well, I don't have to fear any other law. If I stay with the law of God, the law of spirit, then I don't have a feeling that there is another law at work that could overrule really the law of spirit. Against spirit, there is no other law. Then you come to the next chapter, Science, Theology, and Medicine. You hear at once a little touch of the only lawgiver. It is quite interesting that in this chapter she uses that term, lawgiver and lawmaker, various times, whereas in the other chapter she doesn't do that, that she repeats that. We see here that Christ is that which comes from God. So if in animal magnetism we have seen there is no other law but the law of spirit, there is no law against the law of spirit, then we can say, all right, then spirit is the only law, then God is the only law giver. It is not only the law, God is not only law, he is the law giver, and that indicates the Christ, the giver, because the law giver is the Christ, the translation from God to man. The moment you hear from God to man, you know that you are in the Christ, that that's the Christ standpoint. And so we feel here very much that this is the law, that God is the law giver. There are quite a lot of such statements here. They must not always use the term law giver. They can also use the term lawmaker. It's the same thing. It's the translation from God to man as law. So she says, from the Infinite One, our well-known passage in Christian Science, comes one principle. So she starts out with principle, and with that principle come spiritual laws. So we hear the lawgiver again, that from principle comes all law. So he's the lawmaker, he's the lawgiver, he's the authority for laws. So it is the lawgiver. From the invisible and infinite power and grace, you get again a sense of the Christ, from the power and grace, from God. Huh? It's always the Christ touch. Emanate spiritual laws. So here are the laws of the lawgiver. They emanate spiritual laws. Or the natural order of heaven comes down. Can you hear at once? Christ comes down. Again, from God to man. Comes down to earth from the law of love, in which God and nature are one. Again, you can see what she wants to accentuate here is always that laws come from God, that they are translations from God to the universe, and so are the lawgiver. Or she says, science, properly understood, refers only to the laws of God. Again, it comes from science come the only laws. From principle, from the Infinite One, from God, from Spirit, come the only laws. Or she says, the true logos, again when you hear the logos, is a natural law of harmony. Again, we see at the beginning was the logos, and the logos was with God, and without the logos nothing was made that was made. The logos had that sense that it manifests really the word of God in a intelligent, creative, governing way. Or she says, Christian Science is the immutable law of God, good. A miracle is also a law. A miracle fulfills God's law. So we can see again that there happens nothing outside of God's law. There is no such a thing as a miracle which is lawless. A miracle is only a law that we have not understood. That's all about it. A miracle establishes the science of God's unchangeable law. Yeah. These are the most important renderings that we find in that sixth chapter. Again, let's see that we get the flow, the spiritual flow. We have seen in the word column those four chapters which were showing that God is the only law. Okay, now comes the Christ which says there is no other law that goes against that law of God. That's animal magnetism. So there is no law besides God, so from God comes all the laws. That's the Christ, typical the Christ, comes from God. So that we have in science, theology, and medicine, that God is the only lawgiver, the only lawmaker, that all the laws come from God, that all laws are in science and come from science, that from the infinite principle comes all laws. You can hear constantly the source, so to say, of law. From where do law come from? That's the Christ asking that. And it shows us the answer. It always flows from God to the universe. If you have seen that, we can go to the next chapter, to physiology, and we must somehow find a little touch of Christianity in here. The Christ as Christianity. Namely, God's law. Again, you have the Christ, God's law, annihilate material law. The moment you have that annihilation, the demonstration, your thought is on the level of Christianity, because Christianity is at the point of reflection on one side or of demonstration on the other side, which shows that it has the power to overcome its opposite. So that's Christianity. So because it is a power that can overcome, you also have the tone of the Christ in it, the power that comes. What does it come to do? What? It comes to overcome its opposite. Yes? So God's law annihilates material laws. The reference here are a few. It says, God's law, the law of mind, heals in defiance of material laws. Can you hear the tone? It heals. That's typically Christianity. So the law of God comes and heals. You have the Christ it comes from and heals Christianity and heals us in defiance of material law, in spite of material law. Or spiritual law overcomes material conditions. Again, the overcoming shows the supremacy of Christianity. It overcomes, it's higher, it's supreme over evil, over error. And so you have a tone of Christ as Christianity. Can you hear the categories? Can you hear how I am hearing the text, or not reading the text? Just always trying to hear the categories. That's the only thing I do. I try to hear categories. So then when we have that, then our consciousness becomes really structured, because it's structured according to categories of being. We go to the fourth chapter in that column, to Footsteps of Truth, where I had the epitome. Only the laws of God matters, nothing else matters. Belief in material laws must be given up. So you can see now again science that is against beliefs, against the belief in material laws. The science is that which deals with beliefs. Now here it is the Christ science that is at work, that says only the laws of God, only those laws that come from God, Christ, are laws that free us from the opposite laws, from the material laws. They must be given up. Belief must be given up. The law of God demands from us that we give up material laws. The belief in material laws. Science versus belief. The references here are twofold. You remember that in the structure of the Christian Science textbook, we see that the chapter Footsteps of Truth has two parts, the first part and the second part. So in the first part, you have different different accentuations. It says the laws of spirit are primary. The laws of spirit are immutable. Whereas then in the second one, you hear then the opposite, namely the beliefs in material laws must be given up. Can you see? The beliefs must be given up because first it has to establish that the laws are invariable, that they are immutable, that you can't touch them, that you can't influence them. Nothing really can overturn and overpower the laws of spirit. So the second part shows that the beliefs must be given up, that we must give up the beliefs, that the law of spirit must make us free from the law of sin and death, again, to get free from its opposite. Yes. Again, we go through it. Again, we would have to say, now, do these four epitomes make sense? Is there an order in it? Is there the four in it as subtones? The overall tone is the Christ. The overall tone we know is that law comes from God. But in the Christ, then we see that it has four different subtones, which would say that the one law of God brings forth or translates or manifests itself really as all the laws and only as law. So I have put there, all laws come from, can you hear, come from, that's the Christ, come from the law of God. Can you hear that this is the Christ vertical in regard to law? But it says it comes from. When it comes from, then you can ask yourself, well, in which way does it come from God, and what does happen in that transition, in that translating process? And we have the four chapters that have a spiritual order within themselves, which say in animal magnetism that there is no law against that law of God. There is no law against it. Therefore, if there is no law against it, then in the sixth chapter, then God is the only law. If there is no law against it, then God is the only law giver, which means in physiology that God's law annihilates the opposite belief in law, annihilates material law, so that science comes along and says to us, you must have a standpoint of science and not of belief. You better see that the laws of God alone matters, and therefore give up all the other concepts and the other beliefs that there are other laws. As simple as that.